Hello, welcome to This Is Viral. My name is Paco Abiad, and I sure do hope that you're doing well wherever you're listening in from today. Today, we are examining public health in practice. And to do that, I have a truly brilliant guest lined up to discuss how studying public health in school can translate to the professional realm. So instead of me continuing to ramble, let me go ahead and bring her in. Please welcome to the show, Ibukun Amale.
Hello, I'm so excited to be here today. Like Paco said, my name is Ibukun Amale, and I just graduated from the University of Virginia this past May, and I majored in Global Public Health and Women Gender Studies on the pre-med track. And currently for my gap year position, I am working at Whitman Walker Health, which is a healthcare facility here in DC. And I'm working there through a fellowship called the Washington AIDS Partnership, which is a fellowship that has 10 AmeriCorps fellows working towards ending the HIV epidemic. So I'm looking forward to talking to you all about, you know, public health and just kind of what I'm doing and kind of what I envision for HIV work.
Wow. Okay. There is so much to unpack there. That was probably the smoothest introduction for a guest ever on the show. And we've had plenty. So kudos to you.
Thank you.
Before we talk about your work currently and talking about the pre-medical track, which I'm sure will interest many of our listeners in the audience, I want to back up and just kind of catch up as friends. We virtually met in 2020 because we started the podcast team together. Do you remember what our first conversations were like and what your original inspiration was for wanting to join the team on This Is Viral?
Yeah, so I remember us meeting, I think, summer 2020, we were all fully virtual at that point. And I remember us meeting because we wanted to be a part of this, you know, This Is Viral community. And I think we both appreciate the impact that social media can have on educating the community. And I think we both acknowledge the importance of that. And I know for me, that's why I wanted to join, because I could see that in-person interactions were not going to be very scarce. And I didn't feel like education should be lacking just because we can't see each other in person. And I saw This Is Viral as a way of still impacting our community, still educating our community, even though we're not able to see each other in person. So I remember us talking about, you know, what are our goals? I think I was ranting to you about probably MCAT studying and how hard it was, recognizing that we were not only facing a public health pandemic, but there was also kind of like a racial justice pandemic occurring at the same time. And I remember sharing with you just how difficult that was for me, and as well as other people who are like kind of caught in that intersection. And I remember just feeling very safe talking to you about this and, you know, feeling very comfortable just being my true authentic self, spilling everything I had to spill. I think at that point I was going by IDK, like that was my chosen name that I had people call me, but I decided that I wanted to kind of go by my real name versus the name that I felt people were, the name I felt was kind of like more palatable for people. So now I go by Ibukun, which is my actual name, the name my parents thought very hard about and a name I'm very proud of. So yeah, that was kind of our first conversation.
Right, right. I remember that conversation fondly as well. I remember listening to you, and I had just followed you on Instagram, and your profile said IBK. Mm-hmm. And I kind of took a chance because this was our first one-on-one interaction. And I said, hey, like, why is this your social media handle? Are you shortening your name and your true authentic self? And I think we went a little deeper than maybe we had both initially intended, but it was such a great conversation to talk about self-censoring our racial and cultural identities to become, in your words, a palatable name to other peers. I was so happy to see, it was probably like later in 2020, but you rebranded your social media and I was like, yes, this is her. She's here. Yeah. She has arrived in her full authentic identity and can't really claim any credit in, you know, that process for you.
No, I will give you some credit because, I mean, you were someone that I haven't, you know, we didn't physically meet, you know, but you still were willing to like ask me about my name. And it just really reminded me that your name can be like the first impression you have on someone. And I didn't want my first impression or the name that you know, people meet me by to be a name that's not even my name. It kind of felt really false. And it's kind of crazy now. Like, Paco, like today, if I ever meet someone and they call me IVK, I don't even turn around. Like, I'm like, I don't even know who that is. Like, who are you trying to talk to? It's not me.
Literally, who is she?
Who is she? So it's really crazy how, like, in 2 years, I think I've really, you know, not only centered myself or centered within myself, but I've like literally like connected with who I truly am and who I was like born to be, which is not IVK. It's Ibukun. And honestly, I can see myself really trying to push my full name, my real name, like, which is Ibuko Olua. But I know that one is a little bit more difficult to pronounce. And I do recognize that. I think Ibukun is a good medium. I can do that. I don't think I'm losing myself. So yeah, thank you so much for having that conversation with me.
No, thank you for embracing that moment with me. All right, well, I feel like we're warmed up quite well enough in this conversation. So let's jump ahead. We both are graduates from the Global Public Health Program at UVA, albeit in separate years. So I think 1 year your senior. Can you reflect really quickly on just like what is a taste of GPH like in context with the work that you are actually doing in your postgraduate career? And then we'll shift forward to what a typical day like is like at Walker Whitman Health.
I would say that for the longest time, I kind of envisioned myself really being focused on healthcare on an individual level. And I think that being a global public health major really allowed me to kind of like see the bigger picture, and not only see the bigger picture, but also understand the importance of the larger society versus just like an individual. Being in that the global public health major, I was able to, you know, take classes like public health policy and really recognize, you know, we can be pushing so many individual changes, but if there aren't any policies that are supporting these individual changes that we're trying to have our, you know, patients make, we're never going to actually solve the problem at hand. So I'm so glad I was able to major in public health, because I think the type of physician I would want to be would have been completely different, as well as the type of work I would have been doing my gap year would have been different. I think being a public health major really forced me to say I want to truly, truly be in the community. And I don't just want to work with individuals like on an individual basis. I literally want to see how I can impact changes in healthcare on a larger scale.
Okay. I identify much the same about looking at the micro lens, macro lens, mm-hmm. and wanting to blend both together in terms of how to enter conversations with patients and also with mm-hmm. peers. You referenced that you're in your gap year. What is the Washington AIDS Partnership Health Core team?
Basically, the Washington AIDS Partnership is a collaboration of local grant-making organizations and individuals. So it's really just a large group of orgs that come together with the goal of just ending the HIV epidemic. I'm currently based at Whitman Walker Health, and there's 10 of us all together. So there's 10 AmeriCorps fellows that are chosen each year, and we get placed at a different location. Whitman Walker is a really special place in DC, especially to the HIV community, as well as the LGBTQ plus community. So basically Whitman Walker, they provide service to everyone. We're a very like inclusive organization, but the primary focus is on the HIV community as well as the LGBTQ community. So we provide services such as PrEP, PEP, we do STI testing, we do HIV testing, as well as we have like a behavioral health services department. We have primary care services. We have like acupuncture, legal services. So if we ever have like a trans patient that, you know, is really struggling with the legal system, you know, just having resources for that. And I think Whitman Walker really has shown me the importance of public health. Because like I mentioned before, if you have a patient coming into your office and you're seeing them and, you know, they're struggling to adhere to some recommendations you have for them, such as like, let's say you're telling them, you know, maybe you need to practice safer sex. Let's just go with that. And you're like, you know, to you, you're thinking, oh, this is something that's, you know, fairly easy. Just use a condom or get tested frequently. But I think with Whitman Walker, we recognize that there's so many different factors that influence the decisions people are making. So for example, maybe this person is a trans individual who is scared to disclose their trans status to their sexual partners. So because of that, they can't practice safe sex, or maybe their built environment is not conducive for them to practice safe sex. Whitman Walker really recognizes that, and we try to offer services that kind of tailor to each part of an individual so that they can be their best selves and, you know, really, so they can actually just adhere to these recommendations we have for them. That was like a large picture of what Women Walker does. But what I do, I work in the community health department and I do HIV STI testing as well as counseling. And then the other part of my job is doing social media. So I pretty much like run our entire social media department. Yeah, I help with our Instagram lives. I help with our infographics. I create our TikToks, our reels. Like I mentioned before, we're still in this pandemic. So people still need to learn, even if they're not able to come in person. And they still need to receive this information about what's going on. So that's why I think this role is very important, especially right now when people are craving, you know, the opportunity to have some community. So I really try to still create a community for individuals in the queer community, as well as people who are and living with HIV or, you know, have exposures that increase their risk of contracting HIV. Long story short, that's basically what I do.
Wonderful. So it sounds like you have a pretty busy day. Can you describe a little bit more about what it means to truly advocate for patients in the queer community and understanding and here's one of my favorite words, is empathizing with these patients?
One of the ways I'm able to do that is we actually go into the communities that we're trying to reach. So we recognize that, you know, transportation is a barrier to receiving healthcare. So for example, I would say about twice a week, I actually do outreach, which means I'm literally in our mobile health van driving to certain parts of DC that are DC separated by wards. And if you look at like the numbers of, you know, where, which part of DC has the highest HIV rates, it's typically like wards 8, 7, 6. And the closer you get to 8, 7, 6, the more minorities you see living there, which is, you know, if we're talking about gentrification and just the way resources are not being allocated equally between wards, those are some reasons why you see more minorities living in certain areas than others. But typically with our outreach, we try to go to those communities that are really being attacked by HIV still. And by us literally bringing ourselves there, I'm able to connect with people who otherwise wouldn't come to our facilities. And I've heard some patients say like, yeah, I just don't feel comfortable coming into Whitman Walker because, you know, it's not made for us, or we don't see people like us there. And although that's sad, but that's literally that's their truth. And we have to honor that. And the way we can kind of mitigate that is like by literally bringing ourselves to the community that we're really trying to serve. So I would say, yeah, outreach is one way we do that. And I find that to honestly be like my favorite days of the week because I'm able to, you know, have conversations I'm not able to have in the office because people are just more free because they're in their space, they're in their environment where they feel the most comfortable. And, you know, whenever you come to a doctor's office, you kind of get a little bit more shy because you don't want to be judged. You don't want people to ask you, like, question your decisions. But I think when we're actually able to, you know, just like walk around the streets and just ask people about their sexual health, they feel more comfortable, you know, talking about it with you when they can see that you're making the effort to come meet them.
It might sound intimidating to audience members to just say, oh, does Ibukun just jump into the fray and have questions for their patients in different wards of DC and just ask them, like, so how's your sex life? How did you get to the point where you felt ready to enter into these vulnerable conversations? And what have you learned in that process of acquiring these skills? Can you describe a little bit about your, the preparation process for conversations like these?
I would say that I'm just now really feeling very comfortable in the role. In the beginning, I'm not going to lie, it's very scary because you're asking someone to just explain their entire sexual history to you. And you're just like, well, what happens if, you know, they say something that you're like, you get triggered by or something. But I would say, like, if we start from the beginning, I had a very intensive training by various members of Whitman Walker. And, you know, I had to get trained on HIV testing, had to get trained on motivational interviewing, get trained on the different STIs and just how they can show up in different people and just making sure I'm well educated so I can answer the questions the patients have. But I also think that the beautiful part about this role is we really try to make sure the people that we're serving know that we're people as well. So for example, like I don't wear scrubs to work. I just wear whatever I want. Like I try to look as normal as possible. Like, I don't wear like a suit. I don't wear whatever. Like, I literally just show up as me. And I think that's one thing that really helps the conversation flow, is just presenting yourself as, they know we're educated on this, but also they know that we're willing to learn from them. And I would say from every patient, I try to learn something new, or I try to at least teach myself something from each interaction. Also remember just how important, or not important, but how like valuable this interaction was, because this is someone sharing something possibly really sensitive about themselves with you. And, you know, just honoring that they're able to share this space with you. For anyone listening, if you feel like this might be intimidating, I'm not going to lie, it is intimidating. But if you change your mindset from, oh, I need to be perfect, or, oh, I need to have all the answers, to like, oh, I'm actually just going to learn from every interaction, I really just try to remember that every experience is one I can grow from. And it just makes it more fun and less full of pressure to just go out in the community.
There were so many good tidbits in that response, and I'm just trying to digest it all. We talked about the bigger picture, but you also have the ability to pivot and really focus in on the person in front of you, and to deconstruct and build things organically with that community member themselves. I think that everyone can take a little bit of a lesson away from whatever they do in their lives, compared to how you have really grown into this role, and just learn to show up as your true self, and leaving the scrubs, the business suit behind, and just being, hey, I'm just sitting here with you. You've mentioned earlier how within your role in this gap year, the work that the Washington AIDS Partnership, the end goal is ending the HIV epidemic. What goes into achieving this incredibly important goal?
Well, it's a really big goal. And like, we also recognize that this is not a goal that we can achieve by ourselves, which is why I love public health. It just really shows that like, there's so many different parties at play, and we literally all have to work together to achieve this goal. So we work really closely with DC Health. We keep track of literally every test we do. We keep track of every new positive we diagnose. And at the end of each month, we, you know, look at our metrics to see, you know, what's going on. Like, are we getting more positives this month? Are we getting less positive this month? So, and then after analyzing all those numbers, we send those over to DC Health, and they crunch their numbers as well with all the other health organizations in DC. And then we see if we've made any improvements. But like I also mentioned, we work close in hand with a lot of the health organizations here who have similar missions. Just today, I referred someone from Whitman Walker over to Mary Center, which is another HIV awareness organization in DC. So really just keeping that line of communication open between all the organizations is a way that we're going to end this epidemic.
Your final thought there about how constant and transparent communication between the organizations themselves is the linchpin to addressing and ultimately ending the HIV epidemic. In our previous episodes, we've been talking about mental health care, mental health support. And one of the great takeaways we brought in some collegiate and professional soccer players, was that mental health care is a team sport. And in this sense, now this is a new iteration of that theme in public health, in that HIV surveillance, testing, and prevention is also a team sport that requires great communication, transparency, and at the end of the day, authenticity. Does that sound correct?
Yep, that sounds exactly what I was trying to say. Yeah.
Perfect. Let's talk about something that I'm not a very, what's the word? I'm definitely not an expert on TikTok. I don't have one. And people send me links and I open it in Safari or Google Chrome and I just feel like a dinosaur. But I'm sure that you are much more eloquent and proficient in this platform. So most people are on TikTok to dance and sing and do all these other cool performances. But you are on TikTok to educate the people, to educate the public. What are your secrets to success for a Instagram live session or for a TikTok about just talking about HIV education?
I've always appreciated the impact social media has on education, and just I've always recognized just how useful of a tool it is because of how many things I've learned from social media. And I also recognize that we have been bombarded with a lot of technology and social media the past 2 years, So our attention spans are not as, you know, long as they used to be. At least mine isn't. So I found TikTok to be a platform where I can actually pay attention and actually gain valuable information without having to sit through a long, like 10 minute, 20 minute lecture. When I got to Whitman Walker, they weren't doing TikToks, but I told my manager, I was like, you know what? I think TikTok is a great platform for us because one, we can create really engaging content for people, but also the TikTok like age group, like I don't think Whitman Walker has, you know, a reach to them on through like Instagram or Facebook. I found it to be very fun. Like you said, people do go on TikTok to dance, but I try to merge like dancing with education and, you know, really just talking about those topics that people are scared to talk about or might feel are kind of like taboo topics to talk about so openly and just let them know that it's okay. You know, we can talk about it. We're all humans. I've just found TikTok to be a very good platform to do that on because it's compared to like Instagram or Twitter or Facebook, you can truly just post whatever you want on TikTok and you'll most likely find a community. This past February and February 7th, I did an Instagram live with some HIV awareness TikTokers. So these are people who have a livelihood literally educating about HIV. And some of these individuals are people who are living with HIV. And I think if we didn't have this platform or if I didn't tap into this platform, we would not have been able to kind of like showcase the work they've been doing because these are people that were doing it before I even started doing it. It's been a great way for me to find more community and find people doing similar work who have been doing it for some time and just highlighting and showcasing the work they've been doing. So yeah, TikTok has been really, it's been really, really cool seeing what we've been able to do and see the people we've been able to meet.
All right, you've convinced me. I may make a TikTok profile just to follow you and your see your educational modules in the Gen Z 21st century up close and personal.
You should. We also post them on our Instagram so that people who don't have TikTok can still watch them.
Oh, that's great. We're at least on Instagram, so definitely follow This Is Viral. I'm going to plug us right now, at This Is Viral Podcast. Yes. On Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. I've never done this plug before, but now I really feel like a content creator. So do you have a favorite moment or maybe a story or interaction that's come through your work as the social media coordinator and one that you'll take with you as once you move on to the next phase of your career?
My favorite moment so far has been what I just talked about with the celebrating National Black HIV AIDS Awareness Day on February 7th. I really felt like that was really special because I would not have been able to connect with these people if I didn't get on social media and talk about HIV. Like this is a relationship I will have with these people forever. I get more of my interactions with people in person that I'm testing. And I've had people come in that are just so, I mean, I've had like young women come in who don't have anyone they can talk to about, you know, sex, talk to about, you know, their bodies and just how, you know, our bodies are crazy. And I think these are interactions that I will also remember. It's really cool when you feel like you can show up for someone who felt like they didn't have anyone, you know?
That's really incredible. And I'm so glad that you've had the chance to really build upon the Global Public Health Foundation that you started for yourself at UVA. As we move into this imagery of like, yes, moving forward, growth and reflection, I feel like I have to ask what's next for you in your professional career.
Yeah, starting in August, I will be in medical school, which is something I'm very excited for. I'm excited to gain that knowledge so that I can start doing what I want to do, like, you know, start impacting the field of healthcare the way I want to. I've always really wanted to like be at the intersection of public health and medicine. So I hope to, you know, graduate with both my MD, but also get my MPH as well before I'm done so that, you know, once I get into the workforce, I'm doing what I want to do. But yeah, I'm really excited to just once again, build upon what I've learned at UVA and what I've been learning throughout my time here at Whitman Walker and really just gaining more knowledge so that I can achieve the things I want to achieve and make the changes I want to make.
Wonderful. Well, congratulations on your acceptance to medical school. I can't think of anyone more deserving and to see you literally glow up in the span of 2 years of our digital friendship and partnership on the podcast.
Thank you, Paco.
Do you have any remaining goals or ambitions that you want to accomplish during your last few months as a fellow in Washington, D.C.?
I just want to continue, you know, having these conversations with people, really continue just figuring out what are the blind spots? Like, why don't people know about HIV testing? Why don't people know about PrEP? Why don't people know about PP? And I think that through testing and counseling, I'll be able to kind of see what those blind spots are so that I can, you know, I don't think I'll be able to really fix that right now, but I just want to gain that information so that once I am able to start implementing some change or working with more people, I'm able to have that knowledge. I've really worked on myself and worked on really figuring out what my professional goals are and staying true to myself. So I want to continue doing that for the rest of my time here in DC.
Perfect. Well, let's end with one more question here from the, this is the Academic Resource Center at UVA. We do like a mailbag section. How did you find the Washington AIDS partnership and what advice would you give to a soon-to-be graduate from public health?
Yeah. So I would say that one of the biggest tips I have is your connections and the relationship you have with people in the public health community. So that's literally how I found this position. There was a student that went to UVA. I think she was 2 years older than me, and she did this program after she graduated. And I had a relationship with her, and she was able to like talk to me about it. And that's really how the WAP fellowship got under my radar. So I would say that as a graduating student, really, you know, work on those relationships with professors, your peers, even having good relations with people will help you just have a larger, how do I say this?
I think where you're trying to go with this is when you graduate from school, or even if you, like, even if you graduate with an associate's degree or whatever highest level of education you get, the diploma is not really the ticket to your next opportunity. It's actually the network and the community of peers, mentors, and faculty and mentees too, who will help propel you forward and to seize those next opportunities.
That was exactly what I was trying to say. I remember Professor Q just being so helpful. Like, even if I wasn't going to do this partnership fellowship, she had recommendations of other things, other opportunities, you know, I could look into. So like I said, it's not the degree. It's really, what are you making from it? Like, who are you talking to? Who are you making these connections with? I think that's something that I'm so glad I learned so early, because that's gonna really help me in the future, you know, not just relying on my education, but relying on my people skills, one, but also making these genuine relationships with the community you want to work with.
All right, we are running out of time here today, but Ibuku, thank you so much for coming onto the show today. It's been so great to catch up with you, and I'm sure that everyone who has listened in today can take a few bits of advice and inspiration from your year of growth.
Thank you so much.
This has been This Is Viral with Paco and Ibuku. We will see you next time.